This is John Mapaport. Hello, everybody, and this is July 12th, 2013, my monthly Solari report. The title this month is The Surveillance State, What It Really Means. I've been writing a lot, as some of you know, about Ed Snowden. Spoke about that last month. And this has led to further contemplations of the National Security Agency, NSA, and the surveillance state. What is it? What does it really mean? I've covered this from a number of points of view and angles and vectors, and so I want to get down to the psychology behind it. And this is very important because it mirrors what's happening to our society and what's been happening to this country and other countries for a long time now. So, in a recent article called Excuse Me, Are You a Robot in the Surveillance State? I mentioned a couple of anecdotes from the past. A couple of friends of mine in 1959, who were students at Cornell University, decided to do a little spy experiment, as they called it. So this is 1959, right? There's a small airport in Ithaca, New York, right next to Cornell. And one of the guys was coming in on a flight, one of those small prop flights, I think, out of New York, late at night, landing in Ithaca. So his buddy was waiting for him in this little one-room terminal, probably the only guy besides maybe a security guard in the terminal that late at night. So he shows up in the terminal wearing this kind of British trench coat, a hat, and sunglasses. And he paces around the terminal, looking at his watch and staring out at the airstrip. And finally, the plane lands. His buddy gets off, who's also wearing a British trench coat and a hat pulled down over his eyes. And the guy in the terminal walks out onto the tarmac and meets his buddy there. And they have this kind of head-to-head, close conversation for a minute or two with occasional gestures back at the terminal. And security personnel arrest them, just as they suspected would happen, on suspicion of being suspicious. And, of course, they were released, but it proved what they were demonstrating, what they were illustrating. The literal response to literal symptoms or literal indicators. Back a couple of days ago now, I'm just getting this on my screen, we have a new program called the Insider Threat Program announced by Obama. This is going to be a wonderful disaster. As reported by the McClatchy News Service, quote, President Barack Obama has ordered federal employees to report suspicious actions of their colleagues based on behavioral profiling techniques that are not scientifically proven to work, according to experts and government documents. Now, this is going to be a big training program. Federal employees, that's a lot of people. They're going to be put through some sort of training program that will supposedly enable them to profile their colleagues and friends at work and snitch on them when they see suspicious indicators. Right. And then, of course, we will need to have a completely new bureaucracy of some sort to sift through all of these reports and decide which are actionable and which aren't. And it's going to be like a 60-car pileup in the fog on the highway at night when all this just completely implodes and collapses, because you're going to have people reporting other people for all sorts of ridiculous reasons, like he's making more money than I am. He drove to work in a new car today. Where did he get the money? He's wearing a new suit. She wasn't her usual self today. She seemed more withdrawn, seemed to be more nervous. You know, you're going to get reports like this. And some of this is going to be in line with these official indicators of symptomology that would potentially designate a future leaker of classified data, private government data. That's the whole point of the insider threat program. This is now clamping down in a completely, at a completely new level. Again, this is going to be an appeal to what I call, because that's what it is, the literal mind. Be aware of literal indicators, symptoms. Forget about context. Forget about tone of voice. Forget about metaphor. Forget about sarcasm. Forget about humor. Forget about all these kinds of things that are part and parcel of being alive, and just go for the literal impact, the literal meaning, the literal visibility of certain behaviors and report them. And we see this, of course, spreading all throughout society. That's why I've made the suggestion that 100 parents of kids at school, in one school, in one town, should get together and bake cookies in the shape of guns and give them to their 100 kids to take to school on the same day and pull out of their lunch boxes and chew on them. Because we've seen this incredible rash of suspensions and even arrests of kids, you know, for screensavers with pictures of guns on it. The kid brought us some sort of a pink bubble gum gun to school, water pistol. Kid said something about guns. There's a kid right now, 13 years old, who's been in jail for several months down in Texas, in jail, because he made an obviously sarcastic comment during a video game, one of those war games, and a woman in Canada who read this comment looked up the name of the kid and the family and the address and found out they were living near an elementary school. And so she reported this from Canada to the authorities in Texas, and they arrested the kid and put him in jail as, I don't know, seemed like a potential terrorist. The literal mind is where we're heading here, and have been heading for a long time. The surveillance state promotes the literal mind in several different ways. First of all, when you put a nation of people under surveillance 24/7 in many, many different ways, and when you put stories into the press that indicate that this is the case, that this is what you're doing as the surveillance state, when people know this is happening, when they know their phone calls, emails, etc., texts are collected and spied upon. The tendency now is for most people to become self-censors. They censor what they say and even what they think. They begin to shave and carve down their speech to make it simpler, more direct, more lucid, less subtle, less intelligent. So now, for example, if you're in the middle of a party and some guy in the middle of some sort of you know, raucous conversation says something like, I'd like to blow that guy away, or so-and-so should be shot, or let's blow up that whole thing, you will now see at the periphery of this conversation a few faces suddenly go glum and mum, and they're thinking, that could be dangerous. I don't think he should have said that. When the obvious intention had nothing to do with anything dangerous. And any intelligent person would immediately recognize that, but there is a contraction that occurs, a psychological contraction, you see. And that's a next-door neighbor to, well, maybe he did mean something literal here, like he wants to shoot somebody. You see, it easily passes from, that could be dangerous. I don't know whether he should have said that, meaning that could get him in trouble if somebody were to report that, or if somebody is listening to this conversation right now. That morphs into, well, maybe he actually has some sort of, bad intention. Do you see? Because now, in the wake of these events like Sandy Hook and like Aurora and like the Boston Marathon bombing, et cetera, and of course, stemming back to many incidents, including 9/11, this concept of vigilance entrains and entrances minds, people to become more literal in their perception of reality, more robotic, in other words. And so people now begin to think of what other people are saying in ways that they never would have before. And certain behaviors, like these toy guns and so forth that are brought to school, are now looked at completely differently than they ever would have been before. Everything is taken on this incredibly literal, which is to say robotic and insane, because it is insane, basis. Toy gun equals real gun. Cookie in the shape of gun equals real gun equals possibility of school shooting. Therefore, suspension. The literal mind. We've all seen it. We've all experienced it. I don't know whether I mentioned this last month. I don't know that I had even written the story yet, but I wrote a story with the headline, 150 million Americans swim to Mexico, go to Mexico, swim back to the U.S., become instant welfare millionaires. A parody, obviously. Yet, there were readers who thought that I was reporting an actual news story. 150 million Americans, headline, go to Mexico, swim back into the U.S., and become instant welfare millionaires. There were people who thought I was reporting a news story, and then there were other people on top of that accused me of lying about the facts, as if I were trying to report a news story but had utterly failed to get the facts straight. Right? This is increasingly happening throughout society. The Onion, in case you don't know what that is, you could just go to their website, and they also either have or they used to have a television weekly program on cable, you know, does all news as satire. And they constantly get messages from people who assume that the stories that they're reporting are real when they're fake, because they're parodying the news, and yet all sorts of people believe it's true. The literal mind. The literal mind. Now, some people are born with literal minds. They're educated in a literal fashion. Their families are all literal, and they never grow out of it. But then there are other people who are in a gray zone, and they just become more literal over time. And you'll hear people say something like this: well, okay, so he was reported for suspicious activity. Now, of course, I know that there was nothing really suspicious about it, but why did he engage in that specific behavior in the first place, knowing the kind of climate that we live in now? It's blaming the person for doing nothing wrong, because the person should have known and adapted to an insane environment in which everybody is taking everything literally. See, you get this kind of comment as well. And then in this article, which I recently wrote, I'm scrolling down to find it. Let's see where it is, because it's one of my favorite media phrases. It's coming right up here. Okay. Understandably nervous in the wake of. This became a sort of virus that infected the media, because the media were not willing to say this is all insane. But this would be the media gloss on stories about kids bringing toy guns to school and so forth and so on, when these kids were suspended. Instead of saying, guess what? This school system is being run by robots unknown to the parents of children who go to the schools. It's been taken over. This is Stepford School. This is Body Snatcher School. The pod people have moved in and taken over the bodies of bureaucrats that run the school system, because the kid who came to school with a picture of a gun on his screensaver was suspended from school. Instead of the media going at it like this, it's understandably nervous in the wake of the Sandy Hook shootings. See, and everybody who reads this, or most people, go, yes, I can understand that. No, you can't. No, you can't understand that. Yes, you can understand robots, but you can't understand the fact that a teacher or a bureaucrat in a school system who's supposedly educated really can't differentiate between a picture of a gun on a screensaver and an actual gun loaded with bullets carried by somebody coming into the school to shoot people. You can't make that distinction. Yeah. But then we have all these enablers, you see, around nodding their heads and saying, well, yes, that is weird that the kid was suspended, but people are understandably nervous in the wake of. Yes, everybody's understandably nervous in the wake of everything. That becomes a rationalization for the literal mind. And then I give this crazy illustration. Understandably nervous in the wake of the great flood, officials took a man named Noah into custody today after he let two rabbits and two hamsters loose in his garden. Yes. And then I write, the real objective of the war on terror, and then you can also add to that, and the surveillance state, is the creation of literal minds entrained to think in lowest common denominator terms. There will be no metaphors, no distinctions, automatons forever. This is what the surveillance state is meant to induce. This is what is actually behind the entire operation called the surveillance state, the creation of literal minds. And this is what we are increasingly seeing around us in society today. And what happens to people who are on the fence, who see this everywhere around them, this literalness? They begin to adapt to it. They begin to think, well, you know, if I can't say what I think and what I mean, because other people are going to think it's dangerous, then I better not say it at all. And even worse, although it might not seem so, these people on the fence say to themselves, if I can't say what I mean or think because it's going to be too complex or too subtle for other people, then maybe I shouldn't say it at all. Which is like saying, therefore, I'm going to become more stupid. That's my solution to the problem. I will now become more stupid because other people have become more stupid. When, of course, you should take absolutely the opposite tack. Without going into a long song and dance about it, at my website, No More Fake News, which has been around now since 2001, I guess it is, at some point it occurred to me, I reached this crossroad, and it wasn't just one day, it was over a period of about a year, maybe even two, where I was thinking to myself, what do I do now? If I write articles that are too complex or subtle for most readers out there, they stop reading. In which case, why am I writing? On the other hand, if I try to simplify endlessly more and more and more and more to meet the expectation of what I assume is the level of literalness out there, then I'm not writing what I want to write, I'm bored to death, and it's not serving any particular purpose of mine. So what do I do? And I went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth on this, making adjustments, modulations, etc., 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 until finally I got exasperated, and I said, this is just absurd. I mean, how many times, and this is just, you know, my story here, but how many times in our lives do we come up against this very situation, the crossroads, in various ways? So in my case, I ultimately decided that I would go, so to speak, the other way. In other words, I would write everything that I wanted to write, and I would write it in a way that I felt was my best writing, without any regard to trying to figure out what the literal mind could absorb and couldn't absorb. I would go completely the other way, and voila, what I discovered was there were all these people out there who wanted exactly that. That's what they wanted. That's what they responded to. In a way that I had never had any response before to the work I was doing on my site. That was quite, and continues to be quite, a revelation. Even though we have this sweeping, creeping fungus called the literal mind moving through society, it turns out that there are many people, you know, behind closed doors. I don't know where they are, but they're there. They're there, and they're ready, and they're interested, and they are hungry for everything that is not the literal mind. This is a principle that is applicable to whatever it is that you're doing in life. From a business perspective, from a joy quotient perspective, from the perspective of expressing what it is you truly want to express, and on and on and on and on and on. I believe I've come upon a principle. There are always more people out there than you imagine or think that are ready for the best that you can do. the very best. That's the fact. But, you see, we need to understand more about this operation called the making of the literal mind, so that we don't unknowingly fall into line with it, because it's quite easy to fall into line with. And we've all had these experiences. You're in a situation and you size it up and you realize, okay, this is kind of the level, the commonly shared level here that we're dealing with, and I'm here, so what am I going to do? How long am I going to be here? An hour. Okay, so let's have some fun and let's pitch in and become part of the scene, whatever it is. No harm, no foul, no problem. Why not? I'm not trying to legislate against that. And in fact, when you do, you find that it becomes interesting theater, and it's kind of fun, and the people are okay, no problem. However, you keep doing that too often in too many situations, and you find yourself, or you don't realize that you're slipping over the edge. You are now adopting a persona and a level of IQ and a mind that is more and more literal. That's what's happening to you. And judging from my own experience and that of other people that I see around me, this is not only a slippery slope, this is very easy to slip on. In fact, you could, some of you, some of us, other people, could suddenly say, well, this guy's telling me the story of the last 15 or 20 years of my life, adapting and adjusting. And that can be a problem. And I understand that problem. Believe me. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a trick, and it works. And the surveillance state is an apparatus designed absolutely to promote the greater triumph of the literal mind. Not less, more literalness. Okay, I'm just going to scroll down and see whether there's anything else here. One sentence in this article, the surveillance state wants the Matrix to report to the Matrix. I mean, that's what it's come to, right? You're in the Matrix, you're part of the Matrix, other people are in the Matrix, so just start reporting on each other, spying on each other and reporting on each other. And you're going to get people coming out of the woodwork reporting on themselves. If you read my article, I won't go into that aspect too heavily here, but it's like self-flagellation. Just like people go into police stations and confess to crimes they never committed, we're going to see people reporting on themselves. I am a suspicious person. I did something wrong. I said something I shouldn't have said, because you see, it could have, it wasn't that I was going to blow up anything, but it could have been misinterpreted to mean that I was, and therefore I caused distress to others. Oh yeah, this is coming down the pipeline. Get ready for it. In fact, there are people already, on the verge of this. They're already thinking in these terms. Many people. Well, gee, yeah, I see that. I shouldn't have really said that, because even though the 15 people that were there completely misinterpreted it and it caused them distress because of how they misinterpreted my statement, and they were totally wrong, and they were robots and androids and literal minds, and but nevertheless, they became distressed, and therefore I shouldn't have said what I said. I did something wrong. I became a suspicious person for those 5 minutes. You see the crazy logic involved here? And there are many people who will be standing around, so to speak, ready to enforce that idea. he's absolutely right. He shouldn't have said that. And I'm very glad that he came forward and admitted that, you know, he caused a problem. This is what the surveillance state enables and stirs up, brings to the surface in people, this kind of thinking, this kind of behavior, this kind of action, which is completely insane. And these people will be on Dr. Phil. Yes, Dr. Phil. You know, for many years I was living without really caring about what effect I had on other people and so forth. Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's very important. Especially somebody, you know, of your intelligence. You know, you've got to be careful because there are other people around and who knows, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we have to, the concern for the community and the feelings of others, you know. So if it got to a point, theoretically, just to reduce this to some sort of completely mad George Orwell Animal Farm image, let's suppose that we eventually got to the point where if you use the word I in a sentence, not E-Y-E, but the letter I, this could become disturbing to other people. Okay? We've reached a point now where the individual has become such anathema and, you know, is automatically a potential criminal and possibly a terrorist just because he's an individual, so that the language has transformed utterly in our society and people no longer utter the word I. So it could get to the point where, in this, you know, taking it to the complete absurd length, where you, by saying the word I, could cause others distress. And therefore, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And that's where we're heading. That's where we're heading. There's so many vectors. I'm sure that as you're listening to this, you're saying, "What about?" Yeah, that feeds in too. And yeah, a new age kind of philosophy, the rainbow, everything, and it's all going to be this great oneness of the unified cosmicological blah 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 blah. You know, there's all of that propaganda coming through. Which is meant to erase and eradicate the notion of the individual and also the idea that anyone should stand out by what he or she utters or writes or expresses and speaks and so forth and so on, because it could be distressing to the collective. You know, there's that whole vector there. And then we've, as I've said, we've got the surveillance state. We've got the war on terror. Anything could be happening, and therefore all surveillance is justified and vigilance is necessary, and you must report suspicious activity, etc., etc. Many vectors to create the robot state, the literal mind. The literal mind does not process metaphors, does not process parody or satire or humor or sarcasm or any of this, see. No. Does not process the full range of human expression. Only a very tiny slice of it. And that's the point. Because if you can get enough people on that side, if you can get enough people who only function as literal minds, then the game is over. Then you can do whatever you want to do to the population. That is the psychological and really spiritual underpinning here of everything that has to do with the surveillance state. I write another anecdote in this article when I was 5, I guess. That would have been 1943, so we're going back into the Stone Age now. Living in New York, I was sent to a nursery school around the corner from our apartment. Didn't know what that was, had no idea. It was like landing on another planet, and there I was walking in the door, and teacher came up to me and began to talk to me about the way And, you know, of course, this is rather hazy, but it's clear enough for me to remember the gist, how, you know, children are supposed to behave in this school. It was all about behavior. In fact, that's what this semester or so of nursery school was. It was behavior mod. It was operant conditioning, and she was trying to explain, you know, some things about politeness and how we behave toward each other and all of this. And I recall, even at age 5, kind of staring at her, you know, like, who is this creature? Because this is yet another example of the literal mind, you know. Behavior mod means everything is literal. You do A, you do B, you do C. You don't do D, you don't do E. And we don't, there's no subtleties about A, B, C, D, or E. It's all very cut and dried, you see. And I was kind of getting some of that vibe. And when she finished, I looked at her and I said, okay. And she broke into one of these huge, giant, fake smiles. You know, the kind of smile where you immediately know that something bad is lurking behind it. And she said, we don't say okay. We say all right. Wow. So as I write here, so then from that moment on, I knew I was, you know, in an alien environment and that I was going to have to be watchful to understand what was happening, because I came from 19th Street and this was, you know, Pluto or Saturn or something else that I had never encountered before. And so for the rest of the semester, I was kind of an observer, just to see, you know, what was this all about? What was going on here in this behavior mod scene, right? The literality or the literalness of language plays a very key role in behavior modification. Meanings assigned to words are very specific. This word means this. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean this. It just means this. That's all it means. And if you utter this word, then that's what you mean, you see. And this is particularly significant to writers, of course, but it's also significant to all of us, because we communicate all the time. We talk to each other. We do business with each other. You know, that's what's happening. You're talking to people during the day. You're talking to friends, family, acquaintances, strangers, business associates. You're trying to find out information from other people. And yes, sometimes you want to be extremely specific. We understand that. You're not going to write a last will and testament that begins with, I was sort of thinking that maybe, you know, referring metaphorically to the poem by Yeats, The Second Coming, that I might leave a portion of my... No. Yeah, that's when you want to be very specific. And when you're designing parts for planes, you want to be very specific. You know, yes, we understand that. Technology, right. But when it comes to life itself, when it comes to political matters, when it comes to a little thing called freedom, when it comes to what's happening to the Constitution, when it comes to where is this country going, and a zillion other things, you can be very specific without being literal. And that's a point that a lot of people just can't get. Well, if you're being specific, then everything has a specific meaning. That's it. Everything is literal if you're being specific. Not necessarily. For example, in this Solari report itself, I'm being very specific about the literal mind. I'm jumping around and approaching it from all sides, like as if I were examining a Trojan horse and I wanted to see what's really there before we open it up. And many times, in many situations, you are the most specific when you are covering things from many angles, when you are using metaphors and putting up images and making points in various ways so that people will understand at different levels of understanding what you're actually expressing intellectually, mentally, emotionally, in many different ways. It's like saying to a comedian, okay, you're going to go up on stage now, but we don't want any of this metaphorical crap. All right? Say what you mean what you say, get on, get off, that's it. Be funny. Right? Go ahead, do it. And yet, there are comedians who have taught us a great deal about the insanity of the status quo and the way things are. And the more you listen to these people punch holes in consensus reality in ways that you hadn't thought of before, and you find yourself laughing at it and laughing at the whole situation, the more wise you become. So look around you. Look around you at what's happening in this world, in your vicinity, in your environment, in your circle of friends and acquaintances and business associates. Look at what is happening vis-a-vis the literal mind. And, of course, look at television, look at media, read newspapers to know where things are going and what's happening. Because you will see it, if you haven't already. And if you haven't already seen it in yourself, you'll see it, because it's in all of us. There is a tendency towards socialization that is not merely programming that occurs from the outside. Because we all want to get along on some level, you see. So how do we do that? How do you do that in your life? How do you get along while remaining who you are and doing what you want to do? You see, self-expression is something that has, let's think of it this way. It's an elevator in a building that has a billion floors. And most of the time, people are shuttling back and forth between floors 960 and 980. Okay? That's what they think self-expression is, because of their mindset. And they feel that if they shuttle back and forth just between those floors, those few floors, that they're pretty much getting and squeezing out of themselves the full range of everything that they could ever want to express, give voice to, write about, communicate, stand for, transmit. Okay? And they're totally wrong. They're totally wrong. And it's kind of a shame, because there are a million billion floors where the elevator can stop. That's the perspective that's necessary on the other side of the coin to really understand the limited mind and what the surveillance state does in order to enable and promote the limited mind. Is what's the opposite of that is the full range of self-expression, of your voice, however you utilize it, whether it's on the written page and talking to people, wherever and whenever. Because naturally, if somebody thinks, well, look, self-expression really to say everything that I want to say and however I want to say it about everything. You know, it's not that big a deal to begin with. Nah, I can do this or I can do that or I can do this. Okay, so this idea of a limited mind is not really a problem for me because, you know, things are really pretty limited when you come right down to it. And that's a tragedy when it's multiplied by millions of people who think that way. In my collections, The Matrix Revealed and Exit from the Matrix, I try to, I talk about this in various ways and offer very specific, yes, exercises designed to increase the range of imagination, which means increasing the range of self-expression because the two are connected. And if there really are a million billion floors in the elevator of potential self-expression, what you can express and how you can express it, and with what emotion and passion and metaphor and how that connects to feeling that you are alive and are living this life, if it's really that important, then the trend toward the literal mind within yourself, within others, is something that needs to be reversed, And, you know, people say to me from time to time, well, what are we going to do about this or what should we do about that? Well, here's an issue on which there are many things that can be done. Reversing the literal mind. And the first thing that can be done is you don't express yourself as a literal mind. People tend to wake up eventually when they see other people around them who are not doing the literal mind thing. And then in that very article, which I'll read the title to you again from, is Excuse Me, Are You a Robot in the Surveillance State? I offer a few suggestions on things, just like, you know, the cookie baking in the shape of gun thing. Staged events, if you really want to get out there and do some fun stuff. You know, theatrical events, just to punch holes in the whole idea of this insanity of people reporting on suspicious activity on each other and so on and so forth. Turning around the education system, homeschooling, all manner of things can be done. Kids grow up today, and if they know what books are, there are great, fantastic books that they never read and never will read that could, at an early enough age, awaken them to the infinite reservoir of potential self-expression that exists within them, themselves. Essentially, we're being given or dealt a Hobson's choice here. It's sort of like the state and the corporatocracy is saying to us, you moronic consumers and obedient citizens, look around you. What are the possibilities of being alive and living when you come down to it? You can do this or you can do that. You can go over here or you can go over there. You can opt out in this way or that way. I mean, it's not that big a deal. So who cares if mind's consciousness becomes literal? Who really cares? Does it really make that much difference, you see? Because the possibilities are limited to begin with, see? That's the Hobson's choice. That's setting you up to be sabotaged. Setting you up to be sabotaged. What if, for example, and some people will think, what is he talking about? But what if, for example, at the age of 13, you happened to take a book off a shelf, and there was a poem by Dylan Thomas called Fern Hill, and you read it to yourself, and it was like a bolt of lightning that went through your head. And you checked out the book, and you took it home, and you went into your room, and you closed the door, and you read it four more times, and then, God forbid, mortal sin, you read it out loud. Oh, my God, what is he doing? Get him under psychiatric care, drug him. You read it out loud, and that was even more titanic an experience. And looking back on it now, just suppose you were able to mark that moment as one of the most exhilarating experiences of your entire life. Well, that would be like saying that's what life is, experiences like that. That's what being alive is like, that, really being alive, not just being alive, but really being alive, right? And what was on that page in that book that you read? Metaphor, image, expression, color, magnificent rolling sound. That's what was on that page. Expression, the very opposite of a literal mind. That's what was on that page. And understanding that, then going back to this notion that I've been describing here of the of literal mindedness, it begins to add up differently. It begins to look different. Life is not literal. Okay? Life is not literal. Systems are literal. Formulas are literal. Getting certain things done is pretty literal. Yes, we understand that. We understand that. Sure, of course. This is not a sermon on how to bring in utter chaos. Absolutely not. But what is all that formula and system and, yes, technology and literalness about? Presumably, it's about building a platform by which each one of us can live and be more alive. It's not just simply to enable the march of the androids. That's not really what the purpose would be. And so if we slide down that slippery slope ourselves and become more literal-minded over the years, more and more and more and more, we subsequently become less and less and less and less alive, and less and less and less expressive. The surveillance state is based on the foundation that expressiveness of citizens is really a danger, and therefore needs to be shaved and carved and curtailed and put into blocks, geometric shapes, about which there can be no confusion. You see? That's really the program. That's the overriding, overarching program. That's what it is. That's why it's there. That's where the gigantic government and the gigantic corporate partners of that government want to take things. That's where they want to go. That's where they're headed. That's the vision that they have. That's what they see. And why would that be? I've spoken about this many times before, but really it comes down to their notion that a human being is nothing more than a biological machine, and therefore we're just simply talking about one kind of programming or another. So there are no sins, there are no crimes, there are no tragedies, there's nothing except you can have program A or B. And since they're in control and they're in charge, and they want to remain in control, they want to institute a program that will be inserted into every human being so that the control will be easier to maintain on and on into the future. Hey, look at Joe over there. He's operating on the biological program that he operates on. That's all Joe is. He's nothing more, never was. And we don't like that way he's behaving because it's just a little bit too, I don't know, what would you call it? Expressive, yes, okay. So let's put another program in place here, a different one, to get him to be more, oh, I don't know, what would you call it? Literal. Yeah, that's what we want. Then we'll have Joe where we want him. And Joe really won't know the difference because, you know, he's just a biological machine and he could have A or B and he's got A and we're going to take A away from him and give him B, give him the B program. That's all. And that way, we stay in charge and that's what we want. We want to stay in charge. Okay? Okay. I hope you will explore the ideas that I've been putting out here in this. I think you'll see resonances all over the place and in your own experience. And I think it'll stand you in excellent stead. So that's this month's Solari Report. As always, thanks to Catherine. This is John Rappaport of NoMoreFakeNews.com. See you next month.